Welcome to Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color. This is your host for this month, January. We have two hosts now. Dr. Darlene Jackson is also one of our hosts. But welcome back to Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color for 2023. This is the first of the new year. Happy holidays, everyone. And I am always excited to do this podcast and so excited that we finally got L. Holmes Russell to be our guest today. And we have been trying to do this one since what, like June, L?
Yes. And I'm so glad.
We both got a lot going on. So whenever it comes together, I get so excited. I'm going to start by reading her bio. LaShondra L. Holmes Russell is owner and operator of Occupational Transitions, LLC, a mobile women and infants health clinic that offers the following in-person and virtual services: female pelvic floor therapy, early intervention, birth to ages 3 years old, lactation and breastfeeding education and care management, pregnancy and postpartum musculoskeletal rehabilitation, infant massage classes, postnatal yoga, and a monthly occupation-based psychosocial support group for mothers of color in the up to 1 year postpartum period. Elle obtained her Master of Science degree in occupational therapy from Shenandoah University, as well as a certificate in early intervention from Georgetown University in 2019. Since graduation, she has obtained certifications as an educator of infant massage, postnatal yoga, pregnancy and postpartum corrective exercise specialist, and Herman and Wallace Level 1 pelvic floor therapy. Elle has completed the PSI 2-day perinatal mood disorders components of care training and is completing her hours with plans to sit for the PSI, PMH-C, and International Board Certified Lactation Consultant Exams in fall of 2023. Okay, I want to learn more about these initials and credentials. Elle is passionate about partnering with families in order to collaboratively and holistically identify therapeutic interventions that support and strengthen familial bonds, as well as maximize childhood developmental outcomes. For it is Elle's held belief that relationship is the organizing factor in which all development, physical, social, and emotional, occurs, and that society must start thinking of maternal mental health and women's health as an upfront investment in the well-being of the entire family. Agree. In order to provide timely and equitable care services to fully support the mother birthing person's transition into mother or parenthood, a belief that has guided the development and planned 2023 launch of the Grounded and Rooted in Motherhood Wellness Project. Okay, so that's coming up. This is a new project, so we got the inside scoop, y'all. We got the inside scoop on these new projects. Elle, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. As you mentioned, we have been trying to get this scheduled for months, so I am so excited to be here.
And I'm excited to have you. So I read, this bio, which, as I said before the show started, one of the reasons why I love this podcast is because when I read the bios, I found out that there's so much more to the person that I'm interviewing, and you are doing a whole lot, especially in this, I would say, emerging practice area. You can correct me if that's not accurate, that this is an emerging practice area for occupational therapists to really be involved with maternal health. So can you tell us, we'll start just telling us about yourself and how you became interested in OT, and then we'll transition into talking more about this emerging practice area.
Sure. Absolutely. So occupational therapy is actually a second career for me. So prior to transitioning into the field of OT, I was actually working as a low vision therapist with the Veterans Affairs Hospital in Washington, D.C. And so we were under the PM&R clinic. And of course, I had the opportunity to work with occupational therapists at that time. And just kind of looking at our approach as vision therapists and occupational therapists, we both were looking at how does an impairment, an injury, a disability impacts a person's ability to be able to engage in activities that they enjoy, are expected to do, want to do, or needed to do. But as a vision therapist, I just really felt like I was just pigeonholed. Like I was only able to address vision. We really couldn't get into psychosocial aspects of things. And so I was like, what else can I go with this? And again, just being able to work alongside OTs at the VA, it just seemed like a natural fit for me to transition into OT. And so I threw all of my eggs in one basket. I only applied to one school. And thankfully, it worked out. So I tell people I am a proud graduate of Shenandoah University. And while I transitioned, I was in my late 30s going into my 40s. I tell everyone personally and professionally, that is perhaps one of the best decisions that I have made in my life, because I have truly enjoyed this journey that I have been on. And I am like, I am just scratching the surface. So I am excited myself to see where this journey is going to lead me. But for where I am right now in it, I am absolutely happy.
That's awesome. So I forget, I have to remember that we have that background, that overlapping background in vision rehab. So you do have that dual skill set that you bring all that knowledge as a previous certified low vision therapist if you chose to work in that field ever again in the future.
Yes.
Okay, so you go in, you know, you have this low vision lens and you decide you're working with OTs and you're thinking, okay, I want to be more holistic in my approach and not just focus on vision. And it looks like OTs have this holistic approach. You make a decision, you change your career, you love it. How do you then get from, you know, general practitioner or low vision to switching over to saying, now I'm going to go into these entrepreneurial and leadership endeavors and I'm going to focus on women's health and maternal health?
The entrepreneurial side, I really tell everyone, my move to Virginia and just having a different lifestyle than I did. I'm originally from Birmingham, Alabama, and the commute that I had, I was a new mom at the time and I was also a new wife at the time. And I was like, there just has to be something more to this other than spending my time on the road commuting and then going to work 8 hours a day. Like, I was not finding that worth life balance. Although I love the work that I did at the VA hospital and working with the veterans and supporting that mission, I did not have a good work-life balance. And so as I transitioned into OT and I saw that all of these doors could open up, including entrepreneurship, I was like, yeah, this is the way for me to go. Because I always wanted to be that mom that wanted to be at home, you know, with my child, if not a full-time stay-at-home mom, at least to be able to see my child off to school and be there when my child gets home from school. And so occupational therapy has afforded me that opportunity while I'm still building the practice and I'm not at home as much as I would like to as it relates to that goal and that vision of mine. It has given me greater flexibility than I've had previously in my career as a low vision therapist. And so coming out of school and being a general practitioner, I really started having the interest to work with women. I didn't think that I was really going to go into women's health, but just supporting new mothers out of my own experience. So as mentioned, I was a transplant from Alabama. My husband at the time was traveling all the time with his job. I was a new mom. So I really got an opportunity to see how important it was to have that social support system around you. And while my family was checking in, calling me distance-wise, visiting, mom was visiting as much as she could, I still did not have someone who was immediately available to me. And although I know that I wasn't the only new mom going through this role transition, it still felt isolating to me. And so I kind of wanted to be a part of filling in that gap for mothers. And so I started researching what services that were out there. And while there are support groups that are out there for mothers and other type of services, there's still really that gap when it comes to supporting the needs of mothers of color. And so just being a general practitioner, I would see how patients would respond to me who were of color and seeing me come in as a practitioner of color. And just to see, like, not, I won't say necessarily a relief over their face, but to see that they have a practitioner that's going to take care of them when they're in this already stressful environment, I was like, wow, what impact could I make if I was to go into supporting women? And so I initially just started out with creating a psychosocial support group within my community. And that was well received. And I got feedback from that. And then I was able to pull from my own personal experience of breastfeeding. And while my whole birthing process was great, like I didn't have any complications, lactation and breastfeeding went well, just reflecting in my interactions with new mothers and even seasoned mothers, I really began to get into a panic because I was like, I feel like I'm fairly educated, but would I have known where to turn, where to reach out to if I did have some birthing complications within that postpartum period, if I did have challenges with lactation and breastfeeding, or would I have too held on to some of those beliefs in which, oh, this is common during this role transition. And because it's common, we often accept it as being normal. And so we have many who are out there suffering in silence when they don't have to be. And so I was again, I just wanted to be a part of that community. And first, one, just raising awareness that just because there are some experiences that are common in this world transition, they are not normal, and you should definitely not suffer in silence. And also to be a part of that community resource, being able to add to the number of practitioners of color and being able to be a practitioner that look like those who I'm serving within the community. And so it just kept growing from there. And so now I am in pelvic floor land, and of all the places I didn't see myself going, I am here and I absolutely love it. So at this point in my career, I feel like I'm able to provide a very robust wraparound service for all women and all birthing bodies, but particularly for women of color.
Yeah, I can appreciate so much of what you said. You know, one, that you pointed out that entrepreneurship, even though you may not be as home as much as you originally planned to, but you do have that flexibility as a mom. And so sometimes when I talk to entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs, the thought is, well, if I become an entrepreneur, I'm not going to have the time because I'm going to be so busy. But the difference is, even if you're busy, you have flexibility and you have control over your schedule. So if you need to go to that field trip or you need to have that meeting, you can coordinate that. You have that control. And so I can relate to that. And I'm sure a lot of other moms who've gone into entrepreneurship who've actually pursued it have realized that even though you have a lot of work to do, that's a lot of responsibility, there's so much flexibility, which is particularly important for many moms. And then the other thing that you said that a few times, that I was just leaning in on when you said, just because it's common. What was it you said? Just because it's common does not mean it's normal.
Absolutely.
And that's just impactful. Do you want to expand a little bit on that?
Yes. So if we kind of look at like lactation and breastfeeding, you know, it's common that some bodies will experience pain when the child is attempting to latch on. And so mothers and birthing individuals, they accept that as being, it's common. So that's normal. Okay. All the while, by not reaching out, they're setting themselves up for other more devastating and impactful conditions that can truly impede that breastfeeding journey in the process. And also even as it relates to their breastfeeding journey and goals. So you can have mastitis, you can have blebs, you can have all types of infections that can take place, including those who the infection have gotten so bad that the nipple has fallen off, right? Yeah. Because just because they have not reached out and was like, hey, I'm having some pain. And it could be something as simple as just correcting the child's latch. Because what we find in the hospital settings or clinic settings, even just as practitioners, general practitioners, like we can create the environment to get the most optimal outcome, right? But as occupational therapists, we understand that when we get within the natural environments, that's where we're really seeing the true supports and the true barriers. And a new mom who's in the hospital, she's exhausted, she's tired, the baby is placed on her breast, the baby is positioned on the breast optimally. So 9 times out of 10, that latch is going to be perfect. Mom is not going to have any pain. It's not until when mom gets home that maybe some of these challenges begin to show up. And again, because some of these symptoms, some of these challenges are common, it's accepted as being normal. And so mom goes an extended amount of time before she even begins to reach out or think about reaching out or even thinking about mentioning it. And so what started out as a goal of, I want to breastfeed my child for 3, 6, 9 months, a year, 2 years, whatever your goal is, has now either been at risk of being terminated early, or again, it is just impacting her mentally. And so when we think about maternal mental health, you know, we have to consider not only just the hormonal impact, but again, the ability to engage in these activities and occupations satisfactorily. How is that impacting mom? How is she perceiving when baby no longer wants to latch? And I will tell you, most moms internalize that as if my baby does not want my breast milk. So there's so many layers that we have to begin to unpack when we start looking at conditions that are considered common and unfortunately are internalized as being normal when it absolutely is not the case. And so there is a lot of work to do surrounding the education about that, and also just increasing care seeking behavior for all women in all birthing bodies, but particularly for women of color, if we are to improve birthing outcomes.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear on that. And I was thinking about the support that you said, that, you know, you started out with this support group and people are suffering in silence. I will just share that both of my birthing experiences, I had some issues. Like my first son was 3 months preemie, in terms of resources, it was pretty much someone's going to come out because your child is going to have developmental disabilities. Mm-hmm. That was the extent of the resources, not someone that I can talk to about the trauma that I experienced in the delivery room, and even the way that one support was communicated to me. It was like, your child is going to have issues. You don't want to have this child. This social worker is going to come and set you up because they're going to have developmental delays, which in fact, he did not have any of the things that they said that he was going to have. But I didn't have any support from anyone that looked like me, but anyone at all. There wasn't anyone to come and support so we can just have conversation about what that experience was like and how to move forward. Yes. After that. So yeah, I just appreciate that exists. And I'm curious as to, do you work with like the hospital? So after a person has a baby, are they given your information? Like, how do they get connected with you as a resource?
So I am not linked to one hospital at all. So a lot of my referrals have actually been through word of mouth. And so I do have colleagues that work in the hospital that will refer clients to me. But most often it's just word of mouth. Using social media to market myself and kind of to promote some of the services and the support group that I'm offering. And so my hope is to get connected with the hospital and become a part of their community resource list. But right now, it really has been word of mouth, which has been great. So I can't complain about that at all. But the transition is to get connected to the local hospitals. So more mothers can know that I'm out here, that these services are available and where they can reach out to within their community.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, I mean, with word of mouth, you're growing. So that obviously means that you're providing a service of value. And then if you added on, like, connecting with these hospitals, I can only imagine that the demand is probably just, like, through the roof, right? Where when people find out, they're like, hey, I know this exists. I want it. I want this service.
And honestly, even for my colleagues who do work in the postpartum clinic and unit, it's even a fight for them to even just get the mothers and the women in birthing bodies referred for a postpartum evaluation with an occupational therapist. So there's fights, you know, even for those who work in the clinic, because again, we're just not traditionally seen as core members of that care team, but we're slowly making progress in terms of getting that awareness and demonstrating the benefit that we bring to the care team. So hopefully, you know, as more and more OTs kind of emerge into this area of practice, you know, we eventually become part of that standard of care. We no longer have to fight. It's just the referrals are automatic and that the referrals to community support is more automatic as well.
Yeah, and thank you for being a pioneer in that space, because as a person who is also merged into systems like with low vision in the home, you're probably familiar, like in the blindness system outside of the VA, OTs traditionally are not part of the blindness system. And so merging into a system takes time. If you're not seen as part of the standard, sometimes, you know, it could be seen as like, are you trying to do work that we already have established here? Give us evidence that you are the person that we need to refer to, what kind of add value. And that takes time, you know, relationships, trust, and showing that you, be in fact, have outcomes, positive outcomes from our services takes time. And so thank you for being a pioneer. And it's not easy. Let me just tell y'all, might see the pictures and, you know, hear the bios and all. It is hard work when you merge into a new system. And, you know, it is not for a person who's thinking that I'm going to have all the glamour and the money and then I'm going to check the box. No, it is work. It's work. And sometimes the money looks funny, in the startup phase. But if you continue, because there is a need and because our services do add value and we do increase occupational participation for the people we serve, if you stay the course, and I think you can attest to this, you stay the course, you will reap the benefits and you will see the fruit of your labor.
Absolutely. And collect the data.
collect the data. Because you can't just say, yes, we do it. They want to know, show me the proof. Exactly. So we talked a little bit. I mean, you said throughout the interview, you say, you know, people with all types of bodies, and you say particularly people of color.
Yes.
So I want to transition to this question about the limited number of persons of color in our profession. The latest statistic, I think, is below 5%. Hopefully, when this next survey comes out, we'll see something different, but it's been low for years. How has that impacted you as a leader in the profession, as an entrepreneur? Or if it has impacted you, so how?
You know, I think there's always going to be in the back of our mind that historically and systemically, venturing out into entrepreneurship has always been a challenge for individuals of color. But I also see it as leverage, right? Because more of the patient population is speaking up and speaking out and saying that they want more practitioners who look like them. Because while we all go to school, regardless of our ethnicity and cultural backgrounds, we all go to school. We get the same similar form of training. So we understand what evidence-based care, but when it comes to that cultural competency and humility care, like that can only come from someone who has a shared lived experience as you. And so while historically it may have been seen as a barrier, right now I am definitely seeing that it is a leverage for us. And other practitioners who are not of color, they are reaching out. They are trying and wanting to learn how can they serve communities of color. And I just educate them, like, you have to make sure that your board, that your staff, and that your team looks like the community that you're trying to support. So if you have a certain percentage of individuals from different cultures and backgrounds and ethnicities in your community, that's what your team should look like. And so I kind of use it, you know, as my push point. I kind of use it as a supportive point for promoting my practice and my business. And so I haven't had many challenges. You know, as you mentioned, I think it's just getting into entrepreneurship overall, but being a practitioner of color and being a woman who's a practitioner of color has actually served as a benefit for me. And that's perhaps because I'm working in women's health and in this space. Perhaps if I was doing another area of practice, I may see more of a challenge or barrier. But at least in this space, it has been actually a leverage for me. And I've been really enjoying the journey and really connecting with other practitioners outside of communities of color to leverage the resources that they have, right? Because the truth of the matter is, while I have some resources, I also recognize that my other colleagues who are not of color have resources that I don't have. So to be able to tap in and connect with them and to partner with them to bring those resources into communities of color has been fantastic. And so I would say to entrepreneurs who feel like that would be a barrier for them, look at how you can twist that and use it as a leverage for you as well as for those whom you are serving. So for me, it's been a plus.
I love that. I love that. Where you're solution focused, you look at opportunity. I think that's a great way to, you know, to phrase it. You say, you know, let's flip that and see what added value you bring as a person from, you know, a person of color, a person from an underrepresented group. So you kind of, you know, answer the next question where I said, what advice would you give to therapists of color? And you mentioned, you know, therapists of color who see that as a barrier, to kind of flip that. What about advice related to going into entrepreneurship? Let me just tell you, I have quite a few people who love you. When we start talking about women's health, you are making a name for yourself. I have students who are interested and they know of you. What advice would you give to these students, you know, not just the students that I know, but just students in general of color who are wanting to go into women's health and these entrepreneurial leadership roles?
I'm exactly where they are right now. Start where you are as a student. I tell everybody, like, I developed my first program, my support group. I was a student when I drafted that program and I designed it and kind of had an idea of what I wanted to look like when it was time for me to implement that into practice once I became a licensed practitioner. So by that time, I really only had just a little bit of tweaking to do. Connect when you're at these conferences, connect with other practitioners who is already working in that space. Because I'll be honest, my first connection with the community-based center came from a connection that I had with a mental health OT when I was a student. Like, I shared what my interest was. I wanted to work in maternal mental health. And we stayed connected from that time all the way up to now. And so when she got a referral to work with the mom to provide OT-based mental health, she was like, I don't have experience in working with this population, but I have a colleague that does. So that was like my first opportunity to connect with a major community-based partners. So I would say as students, go ahead and draft that program now, write it out right now. It's never too soon or too early to begin to build your program. And even if you feel like there is something already out there similar to what you want to do, I want you to think about when you go to the grocery store, how many brands of bread that are out there on the shelf, and they are right next to each other.
Yes, I love it. That's exactly right.
there are different likes, you know, different brands appeal to different people. And there is something that someone needs that only you can bring. So that is for students and also practitioners who are looking to get into this work or just get into entrepreneurship, period. And also understand that your journey is your journey. Your journey is not going to look like the entrepreneur that you follow, and that is okay. But let your journey be your journey. And you don't have to dive in 100% 10 toes down in the very beginning. Take your journey. I set a goal for myself to transition fully into full-time entrepreneurship 5 years after I became licensed. So I am heading into my third year, so I still have 2.5 years to work on that. And while I feel like I have a long way to go, if I am at full-time entrepreneurship at year five, that's great. If I'm not, then guess what? I'm farther along than I was on day one when I set out on this journey. So for me, the victory is in the preparation. So I'm not holding myself to that defined five-year goal, but I'm using it to make sure that I keep pushing and moving forward ahead. So there is room for you. Don't feel like there isn't space for you, because there is more than enough work out there for all of us to do the work that is needed to serve the communities that we are looking to support and serve.
Thank you, Elle. Can I sign you up for a keynote for something? Because I'm just, I'm soaking it all in. And so I'm hearing what you're saying. Take advantage of your experiences as a student. You know, students are doing these capstones and these program planning. Why not focus on something you're passionate about and do the work while you are in school? And then the other thing you said is network. Use your network. Go ahead and start networking as a student. And even if you are not a student anymore and you're a practitioner, you can still expand your network.
Absolutely.
And I love what you said about not just networking with people of color. Yes, we want to have people around us who have the shared lived experience, but there are many people who don't look like us who add value, and we add value to them. And so being open-minded about the circles and the spaces that you're in, and not being closed-minded, like, oh, if they don't look like me, or being so insecure. Yes. You know, I've had this conversation a lot about like the code switching and how you speak. I'm like, let me tell y'all, I will mess up a word. I will make up a word. You know, I do this often. But you have to be okay with, you know, being yourself. Sometimes you might sound differently. Mm-hmm. That's okay, because your clients, the people that you work with, they don't all speak and act the exact same. So that diversity is valuable. So walking in and knowing that you always, someone said this to me the other day, so I haven't talked to my own self, I'm speaking L. It's, you know, don't think you always add value wherever you show up, regardless of, you know, how you speak or the different types of backgrounds that you have, the intersection, you always add value. And so don't be afraid to go into these spaces and be open to learning from each other. They're going to learn from you, and you will learn from them. And then I love the last thing that you said is like, you don't have to do it all at once. And so many times we look at people and we think, wow, this is the overnight thing.
Yes.
And yeah, I will say you have accomplished quite a lot in 2.5 years, you know, because I don't know that I made that, if I had that understanding that it was 2.5 years that you've been in practice.
Yes.
You accomplished a lot. And I love that you had the goal that, you know what, I would like to be in this place. You have a vision, you have a goal, a measurable goal, full time within 5 years. But if it doesn't happen, I'm further along than I was when I got started. So I've still made progress. So we make our visions, we make them plain as possible, but we also know life happens, things happen. And so sometimes we have to be flexible and we have to shift.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I just got motivated when you were talking. Okay. So we're coming to the end of our time together, but I'd love for you to share what is next for you and how we can support you. Cause I read a little bit about that in the bio, about some of the things that are coming up, but how can we support you in those.
Absolutely. So as mentioned earlier, I have gotten into pelvic floor therapy. I absolutely love it. So that is my next venture. So I still provide these concierge services, but I have had the opportunity to partner with two other women and practitioners of color who are also pelvic floor therapists. So we have formed a collective that is called the TET Collective. So be on the lookout for that. We're going to be hosting webinars and events locally as well as virtually. In my bio, I mentioned the Grounded and Rooted in Motherhood Pelvic Floor Health and Wellness Program. So I am having the opportunity to partner with a longtime friend of mine who has his own fitness studio in Birmingham, Alabama. And so this is going to be a occupation-based fitness program. Again, it does have a pelvic health component. And the reason why is because pregnancy and the birthing process puts us at risk for all kinds of pelvic floor dysfunction. So I tell individuals, if you have carried a little one, if you have birthed a little one, you more than likely have some type of pelvic floor dysfunction. And while you may be asymptomatic, if it is not assessed and if it's not addressed, it can begin to present some long-term effects later on in life. And so we want to work with these individuals early on in their pregnancy or later in their pregnancy or even within their pregnancy as well as in the postpartum period to kind of get them educated, because most often we want to get back in shape and we don't think about getting our core in shape, but helping them understand that your core also includes the pelvic floor. As it relates to the pelvic floor as well, I am 44, I'll be 45. And so I am definitely in the age where menopause happened. And so we're going to be talking about sexual health, reproductive health, and how we can support women in that journey and start normalizing those conversations around sexual health as well. And as occupational practitioners, we know that sexual activity is within our OTPF. And one thing our limited research has informed us about is that this is a topic that is not discussed enough with our clients, and our clients want more from us. And so I am looking forward to kind of diving into the pelvic floor education as well as the rehab and therapy side of things. So that is what's next. So if you are a mother or a birthing person who is 6 weeks up to 1 year postpartum, if you live within my surrounding community at this time, which is Stafford, Fredericksburg, and Spotsylvania, I would love to share more information with you to see if you are interested in participating into this program. It is hybrid, and so most of it will be available online. Again, it will include a fitness and exercise component that is all online. It also includes a support group as well, some breath work, some yoga. So it is going to be a very robust program. And as mentioned, I will be collecting the data so we can demonstrate OT's impact and effectiveness on that pregnancy and postpartum recovery, as well as maternal mental health and wellness.
That's awesome. I wish I lived here because I too am at that age of 46. And so, yeah, you know, when you think about, like, yeah, I want to look a certain way, but it's like you said, it's also things that are happening, definitely things that are happening to me internally that are taboo topics that people don't always talk about. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about that program and seeing it go beyond Virginia.
Yes. Future. Well, that is the goal. We're going to collect this preliminary data, report the findings, and, you know, my hope is that other practitioners would want to adopt this into their own practice. So be on the lookout for that. So for those who may be interested, practitioners who may be interested in replicating this in their own clinic, again, once this beta test is done, we'll be producing the results. And again, hopefully other practitioners will want to adopt and run with it.
Great, great. And so your links and how we can get in touch with you, I'll ensure to put that information in the show notes for this show. Is there anything that you want to leave the audience with as we close?
Yes. So I know this is looking at OT practitioners of color, this particular podcast, but I know it's for all leaders of color, is that, again, we are all out here serving individuals, regardless of what service we are providing. Let's connect. with one another, because we are serving individuals who are complex and who are dynamic and who can truly benefit from the networking that can occur and the services that can be provided when we are working as an interprofessional team, as a holistic interprofessional team. So even when you think that your services don't fit into supporting your current client population or maybe my client population, let's still sit down and have a discussion, because I am almost positive that we all can find a way where we can support one another in the work that we are doing. So I am open to connecting with others for those who are interested in hearing more of what I can bring and how I can support them, as well as learning more about how they can support me and the community that I serve as well.
Thank you. That's what it's all about, supporting each other. That's the reason that you are here today, is that we want to support you. And then you turn it around in the end, just like so many of our guests do, and say that you also want to support other people. So I know that you will continue to be successful for that reason, as well as many others. Thank you all for listening. Thank you so much, Elle. Appreciate your time with us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. And hopefully I share a little bit of nugget that at least one person finds helpful.
Oh, you shared a lot of nuggets. And I have no doubt that a lot of people will find this inspiring and helpful. So thank you again, everyone, for listening. Until next time.